the National Archives podcast series. Archives Discovery Forum 2012, Quickfire Poster Session, with Sam Velumel, Teresa Nixon, Kimberly C. Cowell, and Alison Cullingford.
Okay, well, hello, my name's Sam Velumel, and I'm a Collections Knowledge Manager at the National Archives. And I've been project lead for the Finding Archives project, which we've been working on for the last year. So, as you'll know, the National Archives maintain a number of resources which help users to find records which are held outside of the National Archives. And since April 2011, we've been reviewing these resources and are now coming to the end of the current phase of Finding Archives. So I'm just going to be giving you a short overview of what we've been doing. So the resources that we included in the Finding Archives review were the National Register of Archives, Access to Archives, the Manorial Documents Register, the Archon Directory, Hospital Records Database, and Accessions to Repositories. These all provide information about collections relating to British history, and for various reasons, whether it be statutory purposes or through project initiatives, they've all been developed individually at separate times and don't necessarily integrate with each other as they should. So at this stage, it's worth me just explaining that the stakeholders that we invited to take part in this work included users, contributors, UK archive networks, and interest groups. And we've been reviewing these resources and gathering feedback on how they should look and work in the future. Our objectives from the outset were to document and understand stakeholder requirements for these resources, to consolidate requirements gathered externally with those requirements gathered at internal workshops, which I'll touch on later, and to analyse the functionality required by stakeholders against what we can achieve technically. So we carried out some internal workshops initially with staff from the Archive Sector Development Department, and following that we did a short workshop with the UCAD Steering Committee, in which we asked them to tell us about their hopes, fears and expectations for this work. Following this, we undertook a series of regionally based focus groups, one-to-one sessions and an online survey. And to carry out this externally focused research, we commissioned DJS Research and Elizabeth Oxburgh-Cowan, who's an archive consultant. This was really important to us because we wanted the externally led research to come from an impartial body, and this was an opportunity for our stakeholders to tell us what they wanted without us imposing our own views initially. The project was intended to capture feedback about the look and feel of these resources, as well as the process of contributing that many archive institutions do. So phase one was about agreeing and defining deliverables and who our stakeholders were and conducting the internal research. Following that, phase two was appointing the research team and recruiting stakeholders. Phase three was the external research, and we're currently at the end of stage four, which was business analysis and communicating our findings. So who took part? We wanted to consult a representative sample of stakeholders, and we feel reasonably confident that we've achieved this through the various research methods. 40 users and contributors took part in workshops. 10 plus depth interviews were carried out with general users and professional stakeholders, and over 200 responses were made to our online survey, which ran for 2 to 3 weeks. One of the questions that DJS asked in our online survey was, how important is it to each of the following attributes be included in a resource for finding information about archives online? They were asked to use a scoring of 1 to 100 to indicate how important something was to them, 1 being low and 100 being high. And there were 47 attributes altogether. Following this research, we now have the evidence that there is a clear need for an improved, streamlined contributor experience. And the top five requirements here show that. Number one is your own collection reference prioritised over other unique identifiers. So that might be NRA IDs that we use. Single resource to update, not several. And the next couple are about different ways of gathering information for our systems. And the last one is about providing statistics for usage of data. So to move to the top five requirements overall, what you can see is that generally the priorities aren't focused on any particular element of the experience of using these online resources. Everything is important. Reassuringly, the external priorities married up well with our internal priorities, and we've been able to produce a list of high-level requirements which represent both perspectives. The next steps for us are finalising funding for the 2012-13 build phase, development phase, to continue to review these findings, developing use cases and a high-level map of how services fit into the National Archives information architecture, and to continue to communicate project outcomes to stakeholders, which include users, contributors, the archives networks. So while I've got the opportunity, I just wanted to say from the team thank you to everyone who's taken part in this work. And if you're interested in finding out more about the project, please do visit our project page on the National Archives website. And if you'd like to feedback on any aspect of the project that's been going on for the last year, or to comment on the future, please do email the Finding Archives mailbox.
Hello, I'm Teresa Nixon. I'm the Collections Manager from West Yorkshire Archive Service. I'm just going to give you a very brief outline of our History to Her Story project. History to Her Story is a website that showcases women's history, and the version of this website is a collaboration between ourselves at West Yorkshire and Huddersfield University. It uses archival material from various archive repositories across the Yorkshire region. So it says at West Yorkshire Archive Service, Huddersfield University, Hull History Centre, the Bronte Parsonage and Leeds Libraries. So it's you might have heard of it before, and it was originally created in around about 2003, and over 80,000 archive pages were selected by all of those partners, and the idea was to illustrate women's lives over the last 800 years. I don't know whether anyone had looked at it in 2003 and after that time, but we had various problems with it which were sort of beyond our control, and there were lots of fundamental problems with the original site. So in 2010, Huddersfield University approached us at West Yorkshire Archive Service and suggested that we applied for JISC funding, and they would put in the application and we could work on a joint project to get the website relaunched. So we were really pleased to have that approach from Huddersfield, because we'd been struggling in terms of working out how we were ever going to repair the website. So what we did was the aim of the project, it was a very short project for about 9 months, and it was to repurpose the website. And what we did, we relaunched it last year. I'm just going to outline what we did on the project. We employed two members of staff for about 9 months. One of them was a data archivist, and it was his job to analyse all the data that we already had. So that's all the data that was created in 2003. So the project at that time, they digitised 80,000 images, which is a massive amount, really. It was for us, and much of it was unavailable. So he actually went through all of these images, and he went through all of the associated data, so that was all the CALM-related data. And he found that the CALM data for over 25,000 images had gone missing, and it meant that anybody using the website for a big proportion of the images on there just couldn't access it. You couldn't link between the catalogue and the image. So he had the interesting job of going through all of those images and linking it all with the CALM data, and it was a fantastic job that he did. And we were aiming at sorting out and having 60,000 images on the website, and we actually exceeded that by 20,000. So I think there's just over 80,000 images that are available on there, and those are all of original archival documents. One of the positive things from the original project was that all of the actual images were still intact, so we still had them all there, and they'd survived for 7 or 8 years, so they were all there. So it was just a case of linking up the CALM data with the images, and we did some recataloguing work as well, because we decided that some of the catalogues weren't quite up to scratch and we wanted to improve those, so we did a little bit of work on that too. The second member of staff that was employed on the project was a researcher, and they were based at Huddersfield University. So they spent a few months developing learning resources and education packs and various themed pages. So they spent all of their time doing that. And at West Yorkshire Archives Service, we worked on all the technical side of it. So in terms of the content of the website, there's sort of three key areas. We've got a key themes page, a learning resources page, and then the catalogue that then links to all the images. One of the areas that we placed an emphasis on this time, working with Huddersfield, was the area of women and mental health. They have at Huddersfield a special interest in that area, and at West Yorkshire Archives Service we have a large collection relating to the West Riding Pauper Lunatic Asylum, and there are thousands of pages worth of patient case files. So those had all been digitised and they're all sitting there waiting to be utilised. So we concentrated on those first of all, and we put those images online, and it's enabled Huddersfield University to develop a whole research area in mental health. We use Calm, I've mentioned Calm and CalmView, and you use it in exactly the same way as you use CalmView. And that's just an example from a patient casebook. So for every entry on Calm, we've got an image on there as well, and obviously you can enlarge that so you can actually use it properly and do your research remotely. So it's all there. This particular one, it actually relates to a man. The majority of the material is all to do with women, because it's all about women's history, but for the mental case files, some of the volumes that we digitised obviously had male patients in there, so there's a mixture of men and women in some of those. We were really conscious of the problems of the website when it was first created in 2003, so we wanted to try and make it much more accessible and open to people. So that's why a researcher was employed to develop the learning side of it. So they developed some key themes to help guide people through the website. So those key themes were prominent women, groups and associations, mental health, diaries, correspondence, politics, work and war. And from those headings, you can link through to all the related collections that relate to those particular themes. So you don't actually have to know that you want to go and search for Anne Lister's diaries, which are all on there, or for X person. You can go through various themes. So we've had quite a lot of educational use so far, and usage has increased quite considerably. And we've had quite a lot of positive feedback from various university and colleges about it. So that's it, really.
Okay, hello. I'm here to talk to you today about a crowdsourcing project that we just undertook. And the idea was we were asking people out there, our online audience, to provide geospatial metadata for some of our scanned maps. So what we did was we provided them with this tool that you see here, and they just have to click save, and voila, we have this metadata that we are so in need of, and I'll tell you why. Just some quick facts. 725 maps that were already available online to the public were selected to be included in this project. It opened on the 13th of February, and unfortunately there wasn't much publicity because it happened so fast. In less than 1 week, all 725 of the maps were georeferenced, to my delight. So it meant that traditional publicity didn't work, didn't figure into it at all, because by the time we had put together the press release, it was practically over. So we relied on social media, or it turned out that we relied on social media, because I wasn't necessarily planning for it. It was all about Twitter and Facebook and some older online stuff like search engines and video sites, that kind of thing. It was discovered almost immediately and completed. So just to put that forward about social media, just taking me by surprise. 90 people out there participated, so actually not that many. But the top 5 participants did more than half the work. So I think that's something that's been found time and again with these crowdsourcing projects, is you get a few committed individuals who are really into it and put in a lot personally. The result was very good. The data quality was high in that less than 3% required manual corrections. So that was only 20 maps, a small price. So to say a few words about the purpose of the project, since dealing with maps can be somewhat specialized. Maps, our scanned maps are treated on our website just like any other image. So it's just a scanned image of a map. It doesn't know where it is. So that's the metadata that we're looking for. These materials may have catalog records that have a text description, but actually they don't. So what's providing the spatial metadata does is it tells the scanned image where it should be existing. Basically, it's using a standard, a geographic standard, latitude and longitude, so that those images then can then communicate with any number of online geospatial technologies. So it works very well for our records in the catalog records having those spatial coordinates, but it also is out there and means that these maps can be manipulated using other geographic technologies, but they can also be found using geographic search interfaces. I wanted to talk about what I thought made it successful, and I have to give the prominent position to the content. I was looking at a British audience, and so this first, the Ordnance Surveyor's drawings cover most of England and Wales. So that was going to be relevant to lots of folks down here, so everyone could find something that they could relate to. And the second set of maps was the Crace Collection of London. And since so many people live in London, that was hopefully going to be a winner. The first point of entry was on the British Library webpage, a very simple page, basically focused on this video, telling people what to do. Scrolling down, there was a button on how to take one into the application itself. But this at the bottom is the first of many real-time tools that we incorporated into this application to illustrate where we were in the project and who had contributed what. So kind of some of the crowdsourcing elements were made to be competitive and reflective of our status. The second point of entry was our online exhibition space called the Online Gallery. You may recognize it because it's been up for years and years. So this is where all of our content goes, all of our scanned content. And we simply added a button saying, georeference this map, or if it had been georeferenced, that would be changed to view in Google Earth. And you'll see in a minute what all that means. The application itself was meant to be a fun, engaging tool. On the left-hand side, you would get the historic map that you had chosen or had been assigned. And on the right-hand side would just be modern online mapping, just like what everyone uses through the browser with the gazetteer at the top. One would then go through and assign the points that match. The numbers indicate what the matching points are that were assigned. So the feedback I got from people is it's like a puzzle. It's absorbing, it's addictive, it's that kind of thing. And I had to remember when I was testing it that I was only supposed to be testing. Once it's saved, one is immediately taken to view the output of one's work, which I think was another key part of making this project successful, is everyone wants immediate results. Everyone wants to see, what did I do? What does it look like? And so, yeah, obviously that speaks for itself. I do like this one in particular just because this line of Oxford Street runs so clearly, as does Piccadilly here down to Marble Arch. It just lines up so nicely, but also at the same time is very historically educational. Not many of us would think Lamb's Conduit Fields only 200 years ago was looking like that, and Charing Cross Road kind of went off into the fields. So it's this kind of thing that I find this application quite compelling, and I think it also shows off our image as well, because compared to Google Earth, you can see that ours is quite a high resolution. So I just think that with this new functionality that's available, folks can do with these historic scanned maps what was never possible before, but what folks have always wanted to do, is compare the past to the present, see what it looks like together. The image is then downloadable in Google Earth, and you have the transparency bar, so you can quickly see. I haven't bothered making an animation, because you've all have seen that, but it's just another pleasure of it. In addition to getting immediate results, you can also get immediate feedback. This is part of the, we had an accuracy tool within here. So if you really messed up, this grid wouldn't look like squares anymore. It would all be twisted and turned. So some people felt, who you know, had done several dozen maps, I think at that stage they wanted to see, is it right or not? So they go in and check this tool with each item. The competitive crowdsourcing tools that I mentioned, that I also think made it very successful, were in this part of the web page I called participants, the idea being to create a sense of community among users, a place where they could go and think, okay, this is for people like me who are participating. But it also had the kind of fun part of seeing how do I compare to the other people out there who are doing the same thing. The first one of these little devices, their widgets, is the top five contributors. So it turned out that all five of these folks, four of them came to the British Library last week, and the last one is coming this week. So I've had a lot of interaction with them. But they could see as they went how likely it was they were going to get to visit the British Library. Some of the other tools that were on that page were indicators of who contributed what, like with these two, as well as how the project itself was progressing. If someone was interested in more altruistic ends, like what does the project as a whole look like, this map was showing which maps had been georeferenced. So each red dot was added after someone georeferenced it, and that was neat to watch as the days went by, just, you know, all these red dots appearing all over the south of England and Wales. In addition, there was an element of recognition in this, in that the individual that completed it, their name is listed there. So what's remaining? I mentioned there were some errors that need fixing, so not a big deal. Data management. That in itself doesn't have a lot of demands, but from my point of view, because I do deal with our catalog as well, I'm interested in exporting the metadata that's been created into our library's catalog so that when our catalog gets a geographic searching functionality, then there could be a map there and voila. Lastly, I mentioned I'm into engaging participants, thanking and feedback, and I still am gathering names of people who are interested in participating, and there are a lot of people out there. And we are adding another lot of maps. So that's another set of preparations. We're going to complete using materials that we have available through the online gallery, and then we'll begin scanning maps. And my time is up, so I'm just going to whip through these last ones. As a part of data management, all of the metadata is stored in a Google Fusion table at the moment that can be exported in various ways and visualized. So this was just another neat graphic of the coverage of the maps that were added. And that database can be queried. So I was looking for what I decided was an unacceptable error. And you can tell just by the look of these, there's something wrong with them. So then I'll go into each one of these and make the corrections. And hopefully I've made these points that the content was very important. I felt like what we had there was unique and relevant to the people involved. The application itself, we tried hard to make it engaging and fun and smooth. The immediate results and feedback, everyone wants to see what they've done and compare themselves to other folks. And lastly, a visible overall contribution, being able to see this is what I did. Thanks very much.
You know me as a special collections librarian at Bradford University, but I'm here today on behalf of another job I do, which is managing a new project from Research Libraries UK. Some of you here are part of Research Libraries UK. Some of you are already involved in this project very closely. What we're trying to do is to help our LUK libraries and other organisations make the most of their special collections. This is the blog, and if you want to find out more about the project, look at the blog, and I've also put some details on the flip chart if you want to tweet or follow us in any other way. What Research Libraries UK want to do, their libraries, the national libraries, the university libraries, and of course lots of other organisations, have all these amazing collections. We've been talking about them today. The previous speaker was talking about some amazing collections. And we've now got opportunities to make more and more of these collections than ever before. There's new technologies, there's new ways of working together. We've heard a lot about this as part of the discovery agenda. But pulling all this together and also facing the fact that a lot of us are in incredibly difficult situations because user demand is increasing, higher education is marketizing in strange and, you know, unpredictable ways, and there's much more pressure on collections because they're much more visible than they were. We're in a situation where a lot of the main libraries, for example, are dominated by e-journals and self-renewing collections, and special collections are different. They grow, they're staff intensive. And I think from that background, RLUK wants to serve, to look at what's going on and to try and help libraries and archives make the most of their collections, which, of course, these collections include archives but are not limited to them. We're also talking about rare books, maps, digital stuff. You know, anything universities or other organisations have got that has something about it that makes it special, whatever that quality is, whether it's historic or narrative or whatever. So it's about gathering that together. And what we're doing is we're researching what's being written in published fora, in unpublished places, at conferences like this, who's doing good work, who's doing interesting things that could help others. And at the end of the process, this September, we're going to publish a report which will have lots of recommendations and suggestions that people can take forward. So that's what I'll be doing this summer. I'll be writing this report with a lot of help from lots of other people. And we're going to try and write it in such a way that these ideas might be taken forward, focusing on all the different areas that people are having problems with. Those of you in research libraries will obviously get a lot from this, but I would like to say that a lot of what's covered is relevant to any archive, any library, anyone with anything of that ilk that might want some help. And it'll be freely available online, of course, so you'll be able to see that. So we're sort of halfway through the project. It's a year long. And the next really big thing that's happening is that we're publishing a survey that we carried out last year. I hope that some of you replied to it. It was done jointly by Research Libraries UK and OCLC, who did a similar thing a couple of years ago in the States. And everybody thought, what a brilliant idea. Why haven't we got this data for the UK? So we put that survey together and out it went. And at the moment, the OCLC people and a small group of special collections people and me and some RLUK people are working on these survey results to try and get them out to you, probably in April, I hope, very, very soon. So there's lots of sort of phone calls to California, but I haven't actually had the opportunity to go there yet, which is rather a pity. But, you know, it's quite interesting working with people on such a different time zones. It's quite fascinating. And this survey, for those of you who didn't do it or who didn't hear about it, had about 90 different questions in. A lot were very factual. What collections have you got? And others were very much, what are your problems? There was one that said, what are your problems? What is worrying you? And none of it's very surprising. Born digital, outreach, space. You know, these are all the things we face. But what the survey does, and I think that's what makes it useful, is it covers a huge range of organisations and it provides real, solid, proper, robust data that people can then take away and do things with. They can go to their senior managers or whoever and say, look, everybody else has 7 staff. We have me and we have a million times more collections than the people or whatever. It's benchmarking. And it's really robust data, and the people at OCLC are really good at all that statistical, crunchy, numbery stuff. So it's not just anecdotes, it's really good stuff. And that will be coming out incredibly soon. I don't know, I don't have an exact date for you. I hoped I would have, but we're not quite there. But it will be in the next few weeks, and this will be available for people to take away and do what they like with. And it will mean a lot more evidence about what's going on in special collections in the UK, which includes archives. It's something that we've not really had before, to my knowledge, and it's something that's going to be incredibly useful, and that will inform the final report, because it won't just be anecdotal. I mean, it backs up the anecdotal things we all know, but it's got a lot more going for it than that. So I hope that you will get something from the survey. I hope you'll get something from the report when we come to write it. And what I'm also doing is trying to follow up projects that interest me. So I'm already in contact with quite a few of you about the interesting things you're doing, because what we want is real case studies, real stories of what other people are doing. You know, who's doing what, who's making the most of their collections in what way. Just as if anyone was in Simon's talk, for example, about Hull, they've got 2.5 archivists, but they're still doing some quite exciting things with Bourne Digital Archives. So you could actually write that up, for example. I'm not promising that that will go in, because it's going to be we've got loads and loads of possibilities, but that's the sort of thing. And we could actually say, look, go look at what Hull have done. You could do this. They've got 2 staff. You know, this is realistic. So it's going to be a mixture of that. And it's also going to be trying to bring a lot of these themes together. A lot of things we've talked about today about discovery. A lot of these collections are hidden. I mean, I originally called this talk Hidden Gems to Greatest Treasures. These things can be great treasures, but they have to get out there and be discovered. But how do you support that process, and how do you go about this, and what do you do then? So there's a huge range of questions, and I think I'm going to try and boil it all down into this report that will give us a feel of where we are and where we can go and what support we all need with moving forward with our collections to make them more useful to the researchers, to students, to the public, and of course to our organisations, because we know that these things are fantastic, but how do we get them beyond that? So it's drawing a lot of things together, and you know, I want people to feel that they have some ownership of this thing and get involved with it. So if you want to get in touch, please let me know. It's not just about RLUK libraries, it's about the whole sector, it's about everyone with some sort of collections, and it is not a list of who has what collections. Please don't tell me all your collections, because I'm not doing that. It's to gather together the themes and the problems and ways forward for everybody. I think that's all I have to say. Thank you very much. I hope to hear from some of you soon.
This event was recorded live on the 21st of March 2012 as part of the Archives Discovery Forum 2012 at the National Archives, Kew. This podcast is copyrighted to the National Archives. All rights reserved.